This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The 13th Annual North Carolina Black Film Festival begins in Wilmington today. It's a four-day event that features almost 30 works from independent black filmmakers around the country, including features, shorts, animations, and documentaries. In a minute, we're going to talk with three of the filmmakers at this year's festival, but first we're joined by the festival's director, Charlon Turner. Welcome, Charlon. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you as well. Thank you for having us.
Tell us about the mission of this festival.
It's an awesome opportunity to expose black filmmakers to the area, to give them an opportunity to learn from industry professionals. We have so many projects that come to the Wilmington area, and the opportunity to let our filmmakers get to meet them, to tour the studios, to have Q&A, to have the panel discussion, and also a workshop this year. So we want it to be informative and educational.
What's great about this is Wilmington is not just yet another great city in the state of North Carolina. It's a film center, right? Cool place
it
to
is.
Be. Yeah.
It definitely is.
And tell us more about holding a film festival there and what it's like for both the local filmmakers and then, I guess, for the folks who come from out of town.
Yes, and there are quite a few film festivals that come to the Wilmington area. Ours is in the spring. It opens tonight with the Cinemixer at the Cameron Art Museum. It's a business networking opportunity. As I mentioned, on Friday, we're going to do a tour of Screen Gem Studio. That's the place where Iron Man was filmed. We have Under the Dome here in Wilmington, Dawson's Creek, One Tree Hill. So a lot of projects come to the area, and a lot of people here work in the industry and have a lot of knowledge and experience to share with our filmmakers. So we're really excited about that. We have a workshop this year with Working Films, which is going to talk about documentary filmmaking and the fight for social justice and how you can use filmmaking in that fight. So we're really excited to have them. They're going to be here on Saturday morning at 11 o'clock speaking and working with the filmmakers on that workshop.
Tell us how the film festival, the Black Film Festival, has changed in the past 13 years.
It's changed quite a bit. It was started by Rhonda Bellamy, who's now the executive director for the Arts Council of Wilmington. When she took on that position, she stepped down from the Black Arts Alliance and passed it on to Brandon Hickman, who's the president, and myself as vice president, and I'm the festival director. It started with a film series called Ciné Noir, which was a small festival that started years ago, and she had the foresight to secure the name, the North Carolina Black Film Festival. So for the last 5 years, that's what we've been known as and operated. I think each year we grow, we've gotten better, we've gotten stronger. One of the things that I know that we're known for when I talk to our filmmakers is our hospitality. We really try to take care of the filmmaker, you know, give them lots of opportunity. We hope that they'll come back to the Wilmington area and film future projects, but we just want them to feel special. You know, it's a big industry for independent films, and I know each festival is different, but one of the great things that I always hear about us is how we take care of the filmmakers, what we expose them to while they're here, and the opportunity and the people that we're able to introduce them to.
Well, one of those filmmakers you're taking such good care of is Byron Hunter, who is sitting next to you, and he produced a film called The Lessons of Haiti. Byron Hunter, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you so very much. It's a pleasure to be
welcome.
Here.
Haiti, right here in Durham, North Carolina. You're not from Durham.
I am not from Durham, but actually one of my co-producers is a graduate of North Carolina Central University, which happens to be right there in Haiti.
Right there. So tell us about this film that you produced, The Lessons of Haiti.
Well, The Lessons of Haiti is a documentary that really kind of speaks to the development of the African-American community really across the United States following the Civil War. Many people, when I say Haiti, they always think I'm confused and say, do you mean Haiti? Mm-hmm. What is this Haiti thing? But we've let the nation know about this small community that was a very self-sufficient, independent black community that was raised. It began just shortly within 2 to 3 years after the Civil War. And it's actually a community that existed almost through the 1950s. So not only is it a very historic part of our culture, but it's also one of the longest-serving, independent, self-sufficient black communities that have ever existed in the United States.
And not just a coincidence, Haiti is named for Haiti, which was a very important nation-state in the history of African Americans in this country, kind of shining light on the hill as the first black democracy in the Western Hemisphere. So all of that is a kind of a backdrop, but then you talk about these communities where wealth and African American communities were not only thriving but prospering. Black Wall Street and Tulsa and Haiti here in Durham. Tell us more about those communities.
Well, they were both very special communities in that after the Civil War, they were really built not only just to be social centers and community centers, but they were built to be economic centers that could be that could function independently, that could function self-sufficiently. You know, a lot of people after the war were very interested in education and decided that building colleges was going to be important. Other communities felt that there were other things that were important, building social networks, building schools, et cetera. But Haiti and Tulsa Black Wall Street were really more about let's build a very strong and positive economic base. And if we can do that, everything else will kind of come into play. And so their focus was really a much larger, broader-based idea than just let's get away, let's build our own self-sufficient towns and see what we can do. This was really about let's develop something that can exist and thrive and influence other communities as both of them did over the turn of the century.
Let's hear a clip from The Lessons of Haiti.
When I think about what was going on with African Americans during the period of the Black Wall Street, when I think of what African Americans had in this very location, you know, if we're talking specifically about African-American people, it's almost like, wow, we were doing much, much better in 1900 than we are doing right now in 2012. That's, I got to think on that one. I'm puzzled.
Many of our people believe that racism has been conquered, that it is no longer present, when it is probably more prevalent in our lives than it's ever been before. And at a time that it is more concentrated, we are becoming more disorganized and disjointed and disfocused.
There's a clip from The Lessons of Haiti, one of the films at the Black Film Festival that begins today in Wilmington. Byron Hunter is one of the producers of that film. And, of course, there was something unique about Durham around the turn of the 20th century that allowed for, at least in this particular case, a thriving financial center to grow in this southern city. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think there were a number of influential things, but one of the areas where obviously credit must be really given where it is due is the Duke family. The Duke family of North Carolina, of the Durham area, were very powerful even 100 years ago. And they, as opposed to a lot of other communities, the Dukes were really more involved in partnering with the African-American community, meeting with African-American leaders and trying to establish a common ground, as opposed to post-slavery, you know, trying to look at how to hold people down or how to exploit a community. The Dukes were really more about, look, we're all in this together, and if we work together, then we can make some things happen. So at the turn of the century, you had the creation of North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company, which turned out to be one of the largest and most successful black-owned businesses in our history. You also had the development of Mechanics and Farmers Bank and a number of thriving African-American businesses that grew right across the railroad tracks in Durham. And the great irony of that is that most of those businesses were funded and supported by the Duke family. And I think that that was a partnership that should be recognized, because a lot of people, you know, they see Duke University or they hear about Duke Energy and they don't understand that these people were forerunners in the thought of collaboration with the African-American community and providing them with the self-sufficiency to see what would happen. And Haiti was able to prosper through that.
Well, and just to put a point on how remarkable and unique that was, you mentioned North Carolina Mutual, chartered in 1898. And Charlon, you will remember that 1898 was the year that the most prosperous and the most populous city in North Carolina, Wilmington, experienced the only coup d'etat in American history, when a coalition of black and white city leaders were shot out of office. So that's just on the other side of the state. When North Carolina Mutual is being chartered, the same year we're seeing, you know, one of the great, great tragedies in American history unfold in a very prosperous city with a black majority in Wilmington. It's quite a story. And Byron, what's the legacy today? You think the lessons in Haiti, does any of that hold over today? Does any of that carry over in the way cities like Durham and other cities are governed today and what's going on in those cities?
Well, I think that if you look at history, not only in the late 1800s, in the early 1900s, but I think that if you look at some of the recent actions, eminent domain, the highway department, in the building of this country, I think that you'll find that, you know, in many ways, African Americans were really disenfranchised from an economic standpoint. I think losing the economic centers that we had around the United States, not only Tulsa, not only Durham, but all across the country, I think that was a devastating blow to us, more than civil rights, more than other issues that we chose to address. When you talk about Wilmington in 1898, which is also included in the film, we talk about the loss of businessmen who died. We talk about entrepreneurs. We talk about a black newspaper that lost. Same thing with Tulsa, same thing with other cities. So I think the economic losses are things that we have yet to recover from.
And it's a powerful, in Black Wall Street in Tulsa, of course, the demise was far different and more violent than what happened in Haiti with the development of 147. You can talk a little bit about that and how that was different in Tulsa from Haiti's experience.
Well, the great situation that we had with talking about Black Wall Street in Tulsa was that we actually had the chance to go up to White Plains, New York, and interview a woman named Dr. Olivia Hooker, who was a prominent civil rights activist, but she actually happened to be 6 years old and living in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921 when her community was completely devastated. And so she was able to give us an outlook that we really never knew that was discussed in the film. At that time, Greenwood section of Tulsa, which is known as Black Wall Street, had become so prominent that they were making more money than the regular Tulsa, the main community in Tulsa. And what had happened was that they had established themselves as such a powerful trading post that even the Indians, or as we should say, Native Americans, and the Mexicans, who would also come up to the States to trade, were trading in Black Wall Street as opposed to the going to Tulsa. And I think that there was a tremendous amount of economic jealousy involved. And that really was what triggered what I think was another major catastrophe in this country, was the first bombings. When we talk about, has America ever been bombed? The first bombings took place in Tulsa in 1921, so on a black community. So I think that it showed that economically we could do things together, but we also learned, when you talk about lessons, that when you thrive as a community economically, there will be jealousy and there will be people who are looking to take advantage of trying to get some of those economics back, because that is part of the foundation of this country.
I'm talking to Byron Hunter, who is one of the producers of The Lessons of Haiti. That'll be featured at the Black Film Festival in Wilmington. Another film is called The American Beatboxer, and it's featured in the North Carolina Black Film Festival on Saturday. Manavaskar Kabal is here. It's Kabal, isn't it? Manavaskar Kabal and Rich McEwen join us. They're producers of that. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Manavaskar, tell us a little bit about this film. It features the first ever American beatboxing championship, which I was surprised that the first ever was in 2010. Tell me more about it.
Yes, correct. American Beatboxer is a really fun and exciting documentary film about the art form of beatboxing. And it actually takes place during the time of the first American beatboxing championships that was held in Brooklyn in 2010. And through that experience of the championships, you actually get taken into the subculture of beatboxing and learn about the amazing artistry, the performers, and the dedication to the art form that exists in this subculture. And it really opens up a space for folks who might not have heard of beatboxing or don't know about beatboxing, for them to understand and really appreciate what the art form is.
And Rich, for those of us who haven't heard about beatboxing, what is it?
Beatboxing is vocal percussion. It dates back to the beginning of time, as far as human history is concerned, with the click language. But hip hop style beatboxing started in the 80s. You know, for some of us who are older, we know about Dougie Fresh, Biz Markie. But we tell the complete story in the middle of the film, or the first half of the film, where we try to bring it from the 80s to now, talking about Rozelle, who the two-time Grammy Award-winning beatboxer from the Roots Crew, who's also the judge during the contest, and how he and Kenny Muhammad helped revitalizing it by bringing it to Europe, and it's really taken off there, quite frankly. And they've had world championships, they've had championships in just about all the countries. So it's really kind of ironic that the fact that this American-born, New York-born hip-hop art form just recently had its first championship. So we're very excited about telling that story.
Well, let's hear a little clip from the film The American Beatboxer.
Canada, you know, they came from all around the United States and all this area just to come to it. And it's incredible that it's actually happening because I personally think it's opened the door for more events to happen here.
There we go. A clip from The American Beatboxer featured at the North Carolina Black Film Festival on Saturday in Wilmington. Manavaskar Kablal and Richard McEwen are with us on the program. And Manavaskar, it's interesting because there's a kind of controversy on where beatboxing fits in the history of hip-hop, right? Tell us about that.
I mean, within the context of hip-hop, there's been, you know, celebrated art forms that have sort of, like, been the core of it, you know, from breakdancing to DJing to MCing to graffiti. But beatboxing has always sort of not really gained the amount of prominence as those other elements of hip-hop has. And, you know, for a long time, you know, it's really excelled overseas, the art form of beatboxing in Europe, beginning in the early 2000s with the championships and in great amount of fanfare dedicated to beatboxing. But over here in the United States, we have not really had a space created for us to really appreciate beatboxing. And that's one of the great things that we feel as producers of this film, what we're doing is that we're actually creating a space for folks to really appreciate what this art form is and to really see it for what it can be and what it means to not only the communities that communities of color, but the very diverse communities. I mean, individuals right. In the film are from, you know, they're Filipino American, Mexican American, African American, you know, all different folks.
Rich, well, I'm wondering what happens now that you've done this film and you've shown it around. What kind of reaction do you get to the film?
Oh, well, we're getting an awesome reaction. We won an Audience Choice Award at the People's Film Festival in New York. It's a crowd pleaser for people who know about beatboxing, or even if they don't. The energy and the passion of the beatboxers just exudes in the film, and we have great performances. I mean, what the people were listening to earlier that you shared with them was Korean Effects from Canada, Hobbit from the UK, and Litos from Spain, all champions performing a freestyle, totally unrehearsed, but you swear they've been playing together, performing together for years.
Forgive me for interrupting, but I was going to ask Charlon what she's hoping events like the North Carolina Black Film Festival are going to do for black filmmakers and filmmaking in the U.S.
I think it'll let people know the opportunities that exist. By having the two different filmmakers on today, you see the variety in the films that we're going to have showcased. They're going to be documentaries, animation. They're going to be short films. They're going to be feature films. But the film festival is open to everyone. We want to highlight black filmmakers in the industry, give them the opportunity to display their work and to tell our stories, the stories that are related to our communities. And we want to continue to do that and grow that over the years to come. And that just speaks to the variety of the films that we're going to have with us over the next 4 days.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Charlon Thomas is director of the North Carolina Black Film Festival. Manavaskar Kablal and Rich McEwen co-produced The American Beatboxer, and Byron Hunter produced The Lessons of Hey Ty. He's one of the co-producers. Thank all of you for being on the program. Nice to talk with you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
The festival opens in Wilmington today, and you can get details at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, some lovey-dovey talk with an editor of the New York Times. Stay tuned.
10 seconds. Enemy not located. Yeah, yeah.